Hey, do you remember Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead? Hello, and welcome to Hey, Do You Remember, a show where we reminisce about a movie or TV series we grew up with, then take off the rose-tinted glasses to see how it holds up today. I'm Chris.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carlos.
And today we're revisiting Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
When's your mom leaving for Australia?
Oh, in about an hour and a half.
She's leaving you guys all alone.
I'm getting rid of her for two whole months. I can go to the beach. I can stay out as late as I want. I can do anything. I'm a free woman.
Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead is a 1991 comedy directed by Stephen Herrick and written by Neil Landau and Tara Eisen. The film stars Christina Applegate and David Duchovny's mullet. Applegate plays Sue Ellen Crandall, a teenager who's looking forward to a summer free of responsibility while her mother's busy getting her groove back in Australia. Right? We can all agree on that?
That's
single
totally
mother,
what that
five
was.
Obnoxious kids.
That
trip is all about getting effed. Anyways, mom departs, but not before revealing a horrible surprise. She's hired an elderly live-in babysitter to watch over her dysfunctional brood. The babysitter is a tyrannical nightmare, but spoiler alert, she dies. So, Sue Ellen does what any normal teenager would in this situation. She pretends to be 10 years older, enters the workforce, and revolutionizes the fashion industry, like you do.
Mm.
Donna, what do you remember about Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
Oh, I remember loving this movie. And I have to tell you, I absolutely still do. It is a work of art, masterpiece. I mean, maybe not art, but I loved it so much. I remember sitting on my best friend's floor. We would sit like as close to the TV as possible and watch this movie on loop, I swear, for like 2 years straight. We loved it so much. And a huge part, Mr. Fashion Corner, had to do with the fabulous fashions in this film. I remember looking through, because she's so clever with all of her thrift shopping and going in her mom's closet.
Like her actual outfits, not the fashion show at the end, but just
not the fashion show, but that was part of it too. The whole shebang was very fashion inspiration. So I remember us being like, oh my gosh, well, Sue Ellen can do it. We can do it. And then going into like our parents' closets and being like, this is crap. None of the good stuff is in here. but we definitely put on like many, many fashion shows inspired by Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. I'm a huge accessory person, so what I loved the most was her hard plastic shell of a purse that I was just – you really couldn't find those in 1991. And luckily my grandmother had some old ones, so we used those. But that was the main thing I remember was fashion, absolutely loving it, her dealing with the responsibility. Is it okay to say things that I noticed now looking at it new, or should I wait for that?
No, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, so the number one thing that I realized was, holy crap, Kenny is a pothead. Like, what?
He's got a giant pot leaf on his door.
I had no idea.
What did you think the potted plant he brings home was?
I just thought it was a plant. I thought he was a gardener who liked loud music. I was like, this kid's trouble because of the loud music, you can tell. I had no idea at all.
What did you think they were smoking? Just
cigarettes!
Like, and they were blowing that in the dog's face?
Yeah, I didn't know.
We're going to give your dog cancer, man.
I thought that's what they were doing. I was like, smoking is so bad for you. I did not know at all. And there's lots of swears, which I remembered because my mom wasn't crazy about it. But I remember convincing her that it was okay because the moral of the story was good. Which is it? I'm not sure.
We'll get into that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
we'll get into that. Carlos, what about you? What do you remember about the movie?
This is weird. I remember the most about this movie how severe the facial features were on Christina Applegate's boss.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, I remember her like being like a live action, almost like Cruella de Vil type face.
Yeah.
It haunted my dreams, like, as a child. I didn't love this movie when I was a kid because she scared me. Like,
remember in Total Recall when Arnold Schwarzenegger is wearing the fat woman mask and it starts to malfunction? There's a little of that.
We just compared an human being to Arnold Schwarzenegger's fat woman mask in Total Recall.
Oh my god! No,
it was a real fat woman, and then when it starts to malfunction, I think they go with like Anna. Never mind.
That's another episode.
Yeah. Poor Joanna Cassidy.
We're making fun of her, but ordinarily she's a very attractive woman.
Yeah,
she's
pretty hot, really, stuff. Really pretty. Yeah, oh yeah.
There's just in this movie though, she's—I don't know what. Like, she makes some, freaks me out.
There are a couple of people that make some bizarre choices with their characters in this, and she's one of them. Where, yeah, all of her expressions are very exaggerated, and every time she speaks, it sounds like she's coming on to Sue Ellen. She's just everything I say about you. I have to wring out my panties.
Yeah, it's like she had just gotten out of like some type of acting class, like rehab thing, where she was like getting back to her like touching like emotional roots or something, and she's like, you know, she was just like, the motivation is she's really into this younger person, and so like I'm just gonna make every line feel like that.
Oh, Swellen.
Yeah,
My favorite scene with her was always when she's having the breakdown and she's shoving the M&Ms in her mouth and she's eating them right in the front of her teeth.
Oh, yes, there's also there's a nice upskirt shot in that scene as well of her.
Really?
There is. Right before she puts the M&Ms down in between her legs, it's just like, yoo-hoo, hi.
Oh my gosh.
Also, who thought Sue Ellen's name was Swellin?
Spent the first 30 minutes trying to figure out what the fuck everyone was calling her.
I was like, Swellin? That's a horrible name. But then again, this mother is a horrible mother.
She's a terrible mother. Oh my god.
I will say, the other thing that I remember about this movie, even as a child, I remember going, this is dated. Like, it already was not of the time. Like, it's kind of like Weekend at Bernie's 2. We're just like, this is what, like, people are gonna think this time is, and it's not. It's not like this here.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Donna and I have talked before about how we watched the same movies over and over again when we were kids, and this was one of those movies for her. It was not for me. I remember seeing the commercials for it. And this came out like the year after Home Alone, I think, and I was still coming down from that high. So obviously this got my attention because there's some similar elements. But I remember being sort of bothered by the aesthetic of it. Like, just from the glimpses in the trailer, Home Alone was this really polished, accessible looking movie. And this, to me, looked dirty and cheap and gross. Like, as a 9-year-old, I was being a little judgy.
No, you know what? I'm totally the same way. I remember thinking, like, did they... It feels like they recorded this off of a television set and then put it on. Like, I couldn't put my finger on what it was. I mean, obviously now I'd be like, oh, it's a degraded film quality or something. But
right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's exactly right. It was dirty looking.
But I also, that also sort of added to the intrigue a little bit, because it was also PG-13. It seemed a little edgy. Christina Applegate was on Married with Children, which was a show I wasn't allowed to watch. So it just, it also kind of felt like, oh, this is a movie for the cool kids. So even though I was like, oh, I don't know, I was also, you know, my interest was still piqued. But so I saw it with my grandma and my sister in the theater. My grandma had no idea what it was. She hadn't seen any of the commercials. And it was one of the few times we didn't ask to go see a particular movie. She just said, this is what we're doing this afternoon. And my sister and I were both like, Grandma, are you sure? This seems a little racy for you. But we went, and I think Grandma ultimately enjoyed it more than I did. I'm pretty sure my sister loved it, and I think it's easy to see why. This is not really, the trailers sell it as sort of a kids run amok movie, but it's not. It's not that at all. It's, and I'll talk about that later, but it's pure fantasy for little girls putting on mom's clothes and makeup, going to work, acting grown up, and, I'll get into all that later too, but I didn't hate the movie when I was a kid. I didn't love it. I was just telling Donna, I've never rewatched it. I haven't seen it since then. I do remember almost all of it, though, and there are movies I've seen dozens of times that I can't recall with this level of clarity. So I think there's something to that. These characters are memorable. Certain sequences are memorable. Just overall, it was pretty impressive to realize how much of this had stuck with me after only one viewing. To be totally honest, I was not that excited to revisit this one, but as Donna and I are learning, these movies can really surprise you sometimes. Like, there are ones you think you're going to love that are like, what the fuck was that all about? And vice versa. That being said, we just looked at it with fresh eyes, so let's see how Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead holds up. All right, so right off the bat, HBO Films, this does not bode well. But then, like, the very next credit, I see that it's directed by Stephen Herrick, who also did Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And you can definitely feel that influence in the character of Kenny, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Also, like, the opening titles are animated. It's the cartoon of the cranky old lady running around. And you don't see a lot of this anymore. But this was a big thing for a while. Like, didn't Honey, I Shrunk the Kids do this also?
That was an 80s trope that kind of died. Yeah. Actually, probably right around this, like, 91, maybe.
Right, yeah.
Not by, like, by 93, it was done. But yeah, it was definitely, like, every movie in the 80s, in order to show you that, like, oh, this is going to have heart, like, animated.
I loved it. It took me way back. I was like, oh, man, that old lady. And then she's swatting at nothing the whole time, which is sort of
Even that feels cheap to me. It's like, we've got the budget for one animated character. Can we have a background? No, just solid colors.
No, just let her swing her cane around.
And that, well, so the film proper begins with Sue Ellen and her friends at the mall. And Carlos, I have to fill you in on something. I'm sure Donna already hinted at it, but we've got a couple of these in the bank, and we realized straight away that I seemed to be fixated on the fashion in these movies, like, way more than Donna was.
I don't even see it.
It started off as a joke, but now it's a legit thing. We have Chris's Fashion Corner. This movie was made for that. That might be the only reason it exists. I think the director used the phone booth from Bill and Ted, listened to this podcast, and then went back and made a film where every damn scene was designed for that segment. I'll bring out the big guns later, but right off the bat, this group of girls, high ponytails, side ponytails, headbands, fringe jackets, cowboy hats, hoop earrings. This is an orgy of bad decisions.
But it's I just don't feel like that was 1991. Am I wrong? Wasn't my 1991.
Well, Donna and I talked about, when we did Harry and the Hendersons, we were talking about the teenage daughter and that, and I was saying that it's not just that it's bad fashion from a particular era. It's that this is what a middle-aged costume designer thinks teenagers wear. So
exactly.
It's twice removed from our reality now, where it's dated, and also it was probably a little misguided at the time as well. But the whole point of the scene just sets up that Sue Ellen's mom is going to Australia for 2 months. Her friends are going to Europe, and she's just going to hang out all summer doing nothing. No responsibilities. That's the plan. And then we meet mom and the other 4 kids. Dad's not in the picture. They're living in a dump that looks like the house that the Ninja Turtles hide out at in their first movie.
That's so true.
But let's talk about these kids. There's Walter, the youngest, and his character trait is what? He watches TV a lot.
Being cute and watching TV, I think, yeah, that's about it.
His character trait is that he should have been written out of the script.
Oh, boy, they really could have condensed this into just 3 kids, right?
There's so many kids in this movie.
I didn't remember that there were 5 when I was remembering this movie. I did not remember the last 2 kids.
I think it should have been Sue Ellen, Kenny, and a younger brother or sister. They really didn't need... Because the kids get pushed aside for most of the movie. But so you got Walter, the youngest. There's Zach, the little Romeo. There's some disturbing shit going on with this kid. In the movie and in real life, he
Oh yeah.
looks like he's 10 But the movie treats him like he's 15. I think he actually was 15 when he made the movie, so maybe it's just it's me. But his plot line feels like, I mean, I'd say he's a little hornball, but that's not really it. He's smitten with a girl, and it's more about being soulmates and true love. He's got an emotional boner. He's got a boner of the soul is what's happening with this kid. And he, but the his little arc, whatever you want to call it, it feels like it's meant for, it just feels weird. He feels way too young for, maybe it's just because he looks really young. I guess if he really is 15, it's not such a big deal. But when they show him like on a date with a girl, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Whose car is this, number one? There's also the little sister, Melissa, played by Danielle Harris, who I totally forgot was in this, and I adore her. She's Jamie Lloyd in Halloween 4 and 5. Yep. She's also in the Rob Zombie remakes. Just sort of an icon in the horror genre, just all-around kick-ass girl. But her, what's her deal? She's just violent or disturbed or like...
Well, she's a tomboy. The thing that made me so sad about her is like every... It's like she says 8 times in the movie, like, I thought you were going to sign me up for Little League, and no one will sign her up for Little League. And I can't, I'm like appalled at this. Not a single, there are like,
you know, it's
4
funny.
Viable people who could at some point just like go and like, yeah, maybe it's a hassle and they're busy, but like someone could have like gotten, that's all she wants to do. Like,
in defense.
Everyone else is having so many other things going on. And she's like, why can't I be in Little League?
In defense of the other characters. I don't remember that at all. I remember that she plays Little League. I know that Kenny goes to see her game at one point. I don't remember her asking for something. I was as terrible as Mom.
God damn, everybody's ignoring this poor girl.
Even the audience.
Saying it. Like, please, someone, that's all I want to do. That's all I'm good at. Somebody take me.
And wait, what is she burning? And when the first time we see her, is she burning a bug with a microscope?
Yeah, a bug with a magnifying glass. Mm-hmm.
A microscope. What am I doing?
Not a
microscope. Is she wearing a lab coat and examining beakers? Is she doing science when we meet her?
Mostly science.
And then, finally, my favorite character when I was a kid, probably, I guess, maybe still my favorite character, Kenny, the stoner older brother, or the gardener, whichever version you prefer.
I also did not realize he was a stoner when I was a child.
Yes,
I don't know.
I guess I just didn't know
what that was.
I had a lot of friends with older brothers who I knew. I don't know. I got it. My grandma smoked a lot of pot for glaucoma, so we were always just passing that shit around during the movie, even. I think that's why she liked it so much.
That's why Grandma she took
you.
Yeah, and that's why she loved it. You're speaking my language, Chris. Well, Kenny is played by Keith Coogan, who was also the older brother in Adventures in Babysitting. I hated him in that movie.
Yes.
But I loved him in this. And there are still moments where his whole shtick gets a little too broad for me, but I'm not sure if that's really his fault. I think he's actually pretty damn good in this.
I'm going to agree with you on that. I like him.
I like when, after we meet him, like we're introduced to all the kids and everything, and like Sue Ellen and her friends pull up as Kenny and all the stoner friends are leaving. And so they're checking out all these cheerleader types in the car. And one of Kenny's friends shouts the most absurd pickup line.
Oh my God,
Did anyone else catch this?
Yes.
Go ahead, say it, Donna. What does he say?
Sue Ellen, have my baby.
I mean, look, I get it. That implies that sex has taken place, but that's the event you want to focus on. Hey, I want you to go through a really painful experience and ruin both our lives. Does he just really want to be a dad? Is this character
like,
secretly really complex
like 16
and
16 and 17 years old? Yeah, I don't think that's a good pickup line for a 16
have my
or 17
baby.
Year old.
It's
I just think it's really mature of him, you know? He's got his goals, you know?
Sue Ellen,
he knows what he wants to do.
Let's get a second mortgage and argue about how we're going to pay for his education.
Sue Ellen, get your 401k in order.
I think if you're trying to if you're trying to flirt with someone, don't lead with an image of that person squeezing something bloody and screaming out of their beehole. You know what that reminded me of? Donna, do you remember a certain girl we used to work with? I don't want to use her name, but she was very striking, got a lot of attention. And one day, a guy that worked a few doors down from us came in and asked her out on a date, and this is how he did it. He said, and I quote, "I don't mean to shit where I eat, but would you maybe want to do blah, 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 whatever?" And I was I'm like, oh, bravo. This is how you do it. Approach a pretty girl and immediately give her a mental image of you pooping.
Shitting.
Yeah. That's how I met your mother.
I love her comeback, too. She just says, like, he says, "We have my baby." And she says, "In your dreams, babe." And somehow that sets the whole car full of guys off. They're all like, "Oh,
that was a real zinger."
Like, that's some... What? Who wrote this movie again? Because, damn, that is a bad... "In your dreams, babe." I don't really get it. I don't really get it.
This is, like, written by, like, an 80-year-old man who... You know, like, he used to write for the Pictures when they called them the Pictures. And this is how all the kids are talking. Real hip. In your dreams, babe.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, Mom's about to leave for her trip to the Bone Zone and casually mentions, "Oh, by the way, I hired a babysitter," and that's her at the door right now. And so
oh my gosh,
we meet Mrs. Sturek. Is that right? Sturek?
Sturek, yeah.
90-year-old woman. She looks like Sid Haig having an especially rough day. This woman's disgusting. But here's what I like. This is 5 minutes into the movie. Literally. Five minutes in, Mom's gone, and the babysitter reveals her true nature. She's actually a monster who's going to spend all summer whipping these kids into shape. And, you know, lays out the rules, and Walter, go write a book report. And even the dog, Elvis, is like, "Books, bitch, you crazy." And, she makes Melissa wear that frilly dress, drags Zach away from his date. His date! What the fuck is going on with this kid? And then so right away, like, we've barely established the babysitter, and the kids are already like, no, this isn't going to stand. And they go to Sue Ellen, and I actually laughed out loud when they all walk in, and she's on the phone, and she looks up, and she's like, "Why are you guys wearing name tags?" But they rally together and decide they're going to serve this old bitch a hot cup of justice. But uh-oh, you guys, Mrs. Sturek is dead. Possibly from the heart attack that Kenny's room gave her. Is that what the movie implies?
I didn't really get that, but maybe.
I thought so.
I didn't get it the first time I watched it, but this time I was sort of like, well, she is dead the very next scene.
I guess so, yeah. I have to just say, before we get too much further, about this mother's preparation for a trip to Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Dear Lord, I mean, it made me realize the difference in the world, because she's like, "Kids, my plane leaves in 20 minutes. I need to start getting to the airport." Like, what in the world? That is blew my mind. I was like, I can't even, like, imagine going to Australia if 20 minutes. Like, that is ridiculous. And
it's like, "Kids, my plane leaves tomorrow. In 20 minutes. I have to be there 2 hours ago."
There's so much time that needs to be allowed. And she's taking a shuttle. And it's it's just crazy to me. And then when the babysitter does come and they're introduced to her, she says to her, "Are you sure you can handle this?" Like, what are you going to do if she can't? Like,
right.
Your plane leaves in 5 minutes.
She's never met the kids before.
She's never met the kids. She... like, "Do you know there's 5 of them?" she says. I'm like, did you say that when you were hiring her? Like, what kind of world were we living in? Was this a legitimate thing, or is this just a plot device that's making me angry?
I mean, on the one hand, this is bonkers, but I also, I mean, clearly the movie is interested in just, like, it really just wants to get a move on and get to the point.
Cool.
Home Alone does the same thing, where it goes to, like, the way it gets the parents out of the picture is a little, like, we're stretching it, but okay. This one, though, you're right. It really, really stretches it. Well, here's something interesting about her dying is that is awesome. No, what's interesting is that it's actually, even to the point where she's dead and the kids are trying to figure out what to do with her, it has taken us longer to describe these events than how they happen on screen. It's not even 10 minutes. Yeah. What I was going to say was, I read that there was a version where the setup was a little longer, because what they did was her death was more mysterious and all of the children were suspects because they all had a reason for wanting her dead.
Oh.
But I have to say, I kind of like that they just, wow, if that had happened, Donna, this would have been a combination of every movie we've watched so far.
Oh my gosh, seriously.
All it would have needed was Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But I like that they're just, again, they're just kind of like, ah, look, let's cut the shit. You know why you're here. We already told you in the title she's going to kick the bucket, so let's just get on with it. And then Kenny comes home, and we already mentioned the potted plant, and the only reason I want to bring it up again is I'm not sure Hollywood gets how drugs work. Or the people that made this movie, at least, because Kenny doesn't come home with a baggie of marijuana. He comes home with the entire plant.
he does indeed. And shoved rather carelessly in a bag. I feel like that's not
I understand that.
I watch Weeds, okay? I watch Weeds.
I know that some people prefer to grow their own or whatever, but when have you ever gone to some... Okay. Well, once Kenny gets back in the picture, all the kids all have to decide what to do with Mrs. Sturrock. And they come to the conclusion that a summer with no adults is ideal, and therefore they don't want to let anyone know what's happened. They're just going to ditch the body and live off the money that Mom paid the babysitter. And as they're carrying the body away, one of them says, "She's starting to smell," and another one's like, "No, it's too soon." But that reminds me of something that hardly ever gets acknowledged in movies or on TV, and that's that when someone dies, they release everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a fact that this woman has pooped her pants. Now, I understand why this is something we just gloss over. but if there's
but
one,
not today, folks.
if there's one thing you take away from this podcast, let it be this. The next time you see someone die on screen, remember that they've just shit themselves. Okay, but so the way they get rid of this body, guys, come on.
What?
Donna, you had a big problem with how far-fetched Adventures in Babysitting was. So I think we're going to have a lot to talk about with this movie.
You know what? I was all right with it. I felt
okay.
Fine.
Okay. All right.
I'm at peace with the way they did it.
Kids climbing into the rafters in Adventures in Babysitting, and Donna's out. But the way they dispose of this dead body, that's what I do.
Makes sense. I get that.
This for me is the first major WTF moment in the movie. They just leave a dead body in a trunk outside of the cemetery with a note attached to it that says, "Nice old lady inside, died of natural causes." Because that's not going to raise any eyebrows or warrant any further investigation.
1991 was a different time, y'all. That was fine, just fine.
No, stuff like this will henceforth be known as Clue logic. Because in Clue, we absolutely marveled at how awful everyone was dealing with dead bodies and evidence, getting their fingerprints all over every fucking murder weapon and dead person. And this is just the same kind of thing. Did you guys know you could do this? You know, you can drop babies off at fire departments.
Yeah.
You can just drop dead bodies off at cemeteries.
Yeah, mortuaries, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mortuaries, fine. Okay. Mm-hmm.
There was a time that me and my four siblings killed our babysitter, and we just left her.
See?
Actually, it was at a Burger King, actually.
And it never came back, right?
There were no repercussions.
Absolutely.
See?
No.
This
kids,
whole thing.
Just
it's
do
totally
it.
Normal. It's fine.
You don't
it's
like
fine.
Your babysitter? Slit her throat.
Okay.
Well, it's just another one of the things with the movie where it's like, look, we got bigger fish to fry. She's not in the movie anymore. Deal with it.
That's not what this movie's really about, people. Keep watching.
But so they're all set for a great summer. They realize that the money is nowhere to be found. They tear the house up looking for it and decide that she must have had it on her when she died. So someone has to get a job. And I guess I just don't understand what the point of this is. Like, I mean, I get that they want a summer with no adults around, but why? I mean, just because? I mean, like, not having the evil dictator around makes sense, but what exactly do any of them do that they couldn't have done otherwise? And I understand what they were going for, and I'm just saying I'm not totally on board, because I wanted there to be more at stake for them if they weren't on their own. Or I need to see what's so great about a summer with no adults. Not for Sue Ellen, because of the point of her storyline is sort of the opposite. But for the other kids, this movie is missing what Blake Snyder calls the fun and games section, the promise of the premise. In Home Alone, it's Kevin eating junk food, watching R-rated movies, playing with Buzz's BB gun. All these things he couldn't do when his family was around. He wanted to be alone. We saw why. And then we saw him change his mind about it. But I don't think we get enough of that here.
Well, I think that's a very good point. I have to say, I think for these kids, because it does seem like they get to do whatever they want.
Anyways,
Kenny smokes pot in his bedroom.
Sue Ellen smokes right in front of her mom.
She smokes cigarettes right in front, no problem. Zach is making out with girls. Melissa's doing whatever she wants. And Walter, I'm sure, will grow up to be a fine human being. I feel like it's not so much that they can't do it. It's that I think this particular group of children has been already disappointed so much by adults, and it's just disappointing and depressing to have them around, it seems like to me. Because they mention their father a couple times, and like, he doesn't give a shit. No, don't call him. He doesn't care about us. So that's like a huge, I mean, it's sort of like a social issue, but it's really glossed over, which is fine. But then, and the mom is always just sort of wrapped up in her own life, which is clearly, you know, tough. She's raising five kids by herself. So that's, you know, a big deal. And she's got a job and trying to support them. But it does seem like when she gets home at the end of the night, it's, and certainly, you know, keeping a house in order or whatever is tough work, but yeah, every interaction that she seems to have with them is just more like, oh, you're not doing this right. Oh, you guys are driving me crazy. You should be doing this. I can't do anything for you. I feel like they just want none of that.
I get, like, I'm not, energy. Again, I'm not saying I'm unclear on why they would make this decision. I'm just saying I wish there were a better reason for it other than just, because if you show, like, if the mom was also had this list of rules and was all over them, and then it was sort of, well, this is our summer to cut loose. When are we going to get this chance again? Well, as soon as mom comes home, apparently. Yeah. I'm just saying I wish there was a better reason. And after they make the decision, I just wanted more. I'll talk a little bit more about it later when we get to this stuff, but I wanted more of the kids really, like, living it up. And it, especially because it would have been a nice contrast to Sue Ellen learning, you know, about, oh, well, this is how the real world works, and this isn't so fun being a grown up. And to have that, you know, the contrast of that with what the kids are doing, but there really isn't a whole lot of that. Not enough, in my opinion.
I think that, I mean, I'm looking right now at the movie, I guess the cover for the DVD.
Yeah.
And the quote is, it's Home Alone times five. And I think that, I mean, I think that informs a lot of, like, this movie. I think that they kind of just said, we need our Home Alone and we need to make it edgy for the cool kids. We need it to be something different than Home Alone. It can't be a fairy tale. And I think that they just went with, like, this kind of more cynical look at, like, these kids are like, they're shitty. They're shitty kids, you know, like, they're not, you know, like, Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone is, like, the sweetest kid that you're like, why is everyone picking on him?
Yeah.
With these kids, it's like, you're not going to grow up to be good people, more than likely. You know, like, that's probably not going to happen. Maybe. And I think that it's probably just, like, an uninspired effort all around to just kind of be like, we're just going to make our Home Alone kind of knockoff.
I mean, the movie to me does feel like it was put together very quickly. I'm not sure. I thought I read that they started shooting this before Home Alone had come out. So I don't know when they were making this, if they knew how big a hit Home Alone was going to be or not. But I'm not disagreeing, because it does feel like that. It doesn't, it feels like this was, again, it was put together quickly, a little haphazardly, and there just wasn't a lot of thought for...
It had to be quick. They had a plane to catch in 20 minutes.
There you go. Right? But, well, anyways, yeah, go ahead.
There were a lot... I'm sorry. There were a lot of movies like this in the 90s that were like, kids get their chance.
Blank
right?
Check.
Like Blank Check. The one where the kids were in the summer camp.
Camp Nowhere.
Thank you.
Christopher Lloyd.
House Arrest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there were a bunch of these.
But see, and what all of those do better than this movie, I think, is they have the fun and games section.
Exactly. They all live up to the moments. You know, they all have their fun. And I feel like this was just kind of like, they were kind of like this before. So, and the mom is like the worst mom ever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I'm sorry. I don't care how busy this mom is. Her son is smoking weed in the house. Like,
yeah.
And she knows it. You know? And the one kid is just tuned out on TV the whole time. And the other one is sexually active and he's like 8.
Yeah. Well, and Carlos, someone on her kid just wants to... She is his moon goddess. Do you remember your first moon goddess?
I married that girl.
There you go. See?
You know, it's actually a sad story about the kid. I guess he must have been like 15 though when the movie was made.
Right.
Yeah, he actually ended up dying of a drug overdose at I think 24. He was about to turn 24.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That's
but
horrible.
They even had to that production was almost shut down because of his drug problem in this movie.
Yeah, he had to go to rehab
or something.
Oh my gosh. At 15?
15 years old.
It's ridiculous.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a real shame. That's a bummer. Yeah.
It is. Sorry, guys.
Well, we can get into a part of the movie that I actually like, and that's Sue Ellen's storyline, because when it's decided she's the one that's going to get the job, and her first job is at this fast food joint, Clown Dog.
Clown Dog.
Holy fuck, this place is a horror film. It's like circus music, animatronic clowns, a creepy boss.
Terrifying.
But yeah,
it's someone who's never been to a fast food restaurant writing what a fast food restaurant is.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. Well, and this is also where we meet the love interest, Brian, played by Josh Charles, who I was going to say he was sort of the poor man's Noah Wiley, but Noah Wiley is basically the poor man's Noah Wiley at this point.
It's true.
He's so dreamy. I love Brian so much. My friends and I all had a crush on him when we were kids.
Yeah, I don't mind Brian either. Especially, like, again, to compare this to Adventures in Babysitting and the love interest in that and how this just feels a lot more genuine. But hang on a second. Before we get too far into Brian... Oh, that sounded gross. we are going to rape this dude. Am I wrong? That's what we're going to take turns. But did I get this right? When they're talking about the boss, Brian says, don't mind him. He's on helium. Does he not say that?
I missed that.
I didn't hear that.
I gotta go back and it sounds. I'm pretty sure that's what he said. Oh, never mind that guy. He's on helium. What? His voice sounded fine to me.
What does that mean? Yeah, that's,
I don't know what that is.
Maybe I misheard it. I'm not sure. But the scene after this is Kenny hanging out with his burnout friends on that rooftop, and it's just to establish they have no ambition. It's a quick scene, but I like it because. Even though the arc that this character is going to have is pretty obvious, at least it's there. They're setting something up. And maybe it's because we just watched Harry and the Hendersons where we decided they needed more of this, more setup to certain things. But I appreciated this. Like, it might feel a little obligatory or obvious. And even though the script drops the ball in other ways, in my opinion, this is one aspect where there's more effort than I remembered there being.
Well, I also just want Kenny on screen all the time in this movie. I want
so great.
Actually he and Brian can just stay on screen like the whole time. I was charmed by both of them upon watching this movie.
Yeah.
It could have been a whole buddy movie. They'd gone a different direction where just Brian and Kenny are really surprise friends and they have different views of things.
Yeah, this could have been a movie about Kenny could have gotten a job at Clown Burger.
Yeah.
Oh my god. I like Brian's slow jam sex party while he mops the floor. Let me say, I warmed up to Brian. I liked Brian. While she's got it, she's up to her elbows in fat. Is like, it's unsettling. It's like he's staring at her so intensely. What'd you say?
I said that didn't do it for you.
Oh, I had a boner. Don't get me wrong. But one of those boners I felt really ashamed and confused about. I don't know what this means, is what I was saying to my penis.
Oh, my God.
It was a commentary on America's addiction with fatty foods.
The subtext in this movie is great. Yeah, you're right. You're right. But, okay, so now we're getting really close to my second big what-the-fuck moment. So Sue Ellen needs a new job. But rather than, like, slumming it at another one of these fast food places, she just fakes a resume and applies for a receptionist job. Actually, before I go any further, have either of you ever lied to get a job? Unless it's the one you currently have, in which case, of course not.
No, I can't lie.
I have never lied for a job.
I've totally fudged my resume for certain things.
I always want to. I always think about this movie.
Oh, just do it, says your bad advice friend.
Yes, I should. I don't know. I don't think it's that big a deal, evidently. But I always think about this movie. I think about her big red Sharpie circling the want ads. I know I've done that when there used to be want ads in the paper, when there used to be a paper. And yeah. I know I've done that, and I always think about maybe I should just copy from a resume book. I should totally, and I just can't do it. I can't do it. I am.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Like, what can you lie about? What do you lie about when you lie on a resume? Chris?
The only one that comes to mind is one of the first writing jobs I had for a website. I lied and said I had a degree in journalism instead of in film and video. It was still from Columbia, so who gives a fuck? It still wasn't a real degree.
Oh, man. Maybe I'll start.
But like, yeah, I'm like, no one's gonna check this. No one's gonna care. I didn't write and I was valedictorian.
Neuroscience. Mm-hmm.
And here's my commencement speech on YouTube, and it's
and it's just your head on Steve Jobs.
Right, yeah. Not even that much effort.
It's just Steve Jobs.
Okay, so this part of the movie is flat out fucking banana burgers. So we meet the receptionist at GAW, and this woman is in so many late 80s, early 90s movies. She almost always plays a snooty patootie. And this is also where we meet Rose, previously mentioned Rose, played by Joanna Cassidy. And there's one line here where Sue Ellen describes the bitchy receptionist as someone who talks like they're eating their own face. Mm. And Rose is like, that's the one. First of all, what does that even mean? And because if anything, that the receptionist over-articulates everything. And if I were trying to eat my face, I think it would be the opposite.
Yeah, you'd sound like you'd sound like the dude from Hannibal.
Mm. I was just gonna say you'd sound like Gary Oldman in Hannibal. Yeah,
you sound more like this.
Yeah, but so Rose, this part, oh my God, Rose just instantly makes Sue Ellen her assistant. It is literally, wow, great resume. Here's your office. Mm. What the? I mean, again, I appreciate the brevity of the movie, but this is a little silly. Mm-hmm.
I will say this about that moment is that Rose comes off as like bananas herself, and also like just kind of incompetent, or that's not the right word. I guess like on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
Okay.
At like any moment. So like I've seen people like you, we all worked at the Buck. We know, like, we've seen people like this who are like, how do you have a job with any power? Like, you can't handle any responsibility. Like, you're going to crack under this pressure. That's what she kind of came off as to me, which again is why I didn't love this movie as a kid, because she stressed me out.
So maybe Sue Ellen just walks in at exactly the right time.
Exactly.
Where, oh, I need an assistant. I don't want to. You'll do. Here's your office.
Right.
She hates Carolyn.
Okay. What's her name? Swellen? Okay, great.
Swellen, perfect.
But, well, and this is also where we meet Rose's sleazy, sort of, not really, boyfriend, slick dick, McFucks a lot. What's his
name? Gus. Gross Gus.
Gross Gus. Oh my gosh. We'll talk about him a little later too. So she gets the job. She goes, takes the kids out for pizza to celebrate. It's something that looks like a Chuck E. Cheese's or, you know, whatever the fuck. When they leave this place, you guys...
Oh my God, I love this.
We need to talk about
this.
The car getting stolen.
I love this.
Do you? You love this?
I love it because it's so ridiculous.
Their car gets stolen by... Who steals their car?
Liza Minnelli!
No, that'd be awesome.
It's three drag queens, and I had no recollection of that. And when they showed up on my screen as an adult, I was like, what? Yeah.
And is this a problem in the suburbs?
I think it
roving
is.
Gangs of drag queens hotwiring old automobiles.
Yeah, and that's the reason that they can't call it in. It's like this, or it's listed as one of the main reasons, because what are they going to do? Say Liza Minnelli stole our Buick.
This is like Harry and the Hendersons when he calls the police and there's like, what can I say? And you and I had this fight last time where you were like, George Henderson is correct. You cannot call the police for Bigfoot. And I was saying, yes, you goddamn can. You just leave Bigfoot out of it.
You just say.
So you don't have to say Liza Minnelli stole my car. You don't even have to say three drag queens stole my car. How about 911? My car was stolen. But you know what I think makes more sense is that it's not their car.
It's not their car. So that's a better reason.
That should have been the only reason.
Yeah, it
like,
should have been.
What are we going to call the cops? That's not our car. And then they're going to trace it back to this woman who we left in a trunk at a mortuary because that's what you do.
That is what you do.
So Brian comes to rescue them in the clown dog delivery van. And is anyone else wondering why he needed to play the circus music as he does this?
I'm glad you asked that. I think he can't not play it. I think it has to. I think it's like linked with the engine.
No. You don't
I do.
Start
I think
the van in the music.
I think it's
starts.
Wired that way. I swear, that's what I think.
When I was a kid, yeah, that's what I thought about like ice cream
but
trucks.
You thought
it's like, when you turn them on, they
wait,
have to play.
Did you just
the
liken
music.
Me to a child? I think you.
Guys,
okay.
But the thing is, you're both wrong. That's not true. There is definitely.
Well, I said
when
I was a child. I know now.
What about this car? You don't know anything about this particular van. It just has to play.
Clown Dog does things a little
they
different.
They do.
I just okay, fine. Maybe he's proud. Whatever.
Okay, this whole movie kind of seems like I said earlier, like a really old person wrote this. Mm. But it could also be like a really young person wrote this. Like someone who really doesn't know how the world works. Like,
who thinks that kinda, the music starts when you turn the key.
Right, exactly. And who thinks that like you can just fake a resume and no one will vet you. Or, yep. You know, yeah, all that stuff, all that good stuff.
You know, the important thing about Brian that we forgot to mention is that we find out that he's Snooty Patootie's little brother.
Crazy.
And this sets up kind of a nice dynamic where he's hearing all these stories from her about this new girl at the office who stole her job and, you know, what a bitch. And Sue Ellen has to keep this secret from him about what she does and whatever. They don't really do a ton with it, but I don't know.
It's a level. It's something. It's there. Yeah. It's there. It's good.
And I think this is the same time we meet Kathy, who's another receptionist, I think.
No,
she's the one that winds up.
She doesn't count. She's not a receptionist.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. But she's the one that winds up doing most of Sue Ellen's work for her. I love the sound design and the scene where her and Sue Ellen meet and Sue Ellen's trying to figure out how to use the fax machine because that thing straight up burps, you guys.
It does.
The fax machine burps.
There was this like cartoony like thing about movies in that period. Like everything was like a Warner Brothers cartoon. Like everything
even
would just make whatever sound it wanted.
Even in legitimate movies, like in Jurassic Park, when Dennis Nedry slips and you get the whoop 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 whoop. There's it's there. Now, you guys, you may have thought that this movie hit its sleazy guy quota with Slick Dick Gus.
Oh.
But guess what? Oh. There's another one. David de goddamn Coveney. Oh. The Double D.
Oh, Double D.
He's Snooty Patootie's boyfriend, and he ain't got time for this new chick and her phone calls. And you know he's important because he's got the sleeves of his blazer rolled up Miami Vice style.
Oh, so cool.
Were we still doing that in 1991?
Every day.
Nothing in this movie was happening in 1991.
All of it was.
None of it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where
Australia
you guys grew
Australia didn't
up.
Exist yet in 1991.
Tell you what, down in Danville, Illinois, you bet the coolest guys in town were rolling their sleeves up just like that. And I can't hear another word about it. That was real. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That was real.
It was.
Well, so we get introduced to the concept of petty cash, which Sue Ellen steals because she can't wait for her first paycheck. They're out, the family's out of money.
Wait. We can't skip this.
Yeah.
This is where I got introduced to the concept of petty cash in general in my life. Like, I mentioned to my brother that I was going to be doing this about this movie, and he goes, petty cash. And I was like, yes, right. Petty cash. That yeah. was like, it was like the concept that I came away from this movie from, other than, like, you know, how you can dispose of a body quickly, mm-hmm. was, yeah, the idea of petty cash. Like, it was the one thing that this movie taught me.
It was awesome.
Well, I like that already, sort of like this early on, Sue Ellen, we're starting to see that she's kind of turning into her mom. She comes home from work and just wants to relax in the tub and yells at Kenny to turn his music down. Walks into a room full of dudes in just a towel, by the way.
Yeah, she's kind of asking for that baby, don't you think? Mm-hmm.
She's like, look, I've thought about it. You're right.
You're right. I'll have your baby. You got it.
I've already got the career. Now I want the baby. Put it in me.
Oh, this is her leaning in.
Oh, my God.
But this is... Yeah, this is the one part of the movie I like, is that reality hits hard. I wouldn't call it reality. The pseudo-reality of this movie hits Sue Ellen hard.
Quickly.
And again, like I said before, this is where, to me, it feels like we should start getting a bigger contrast between what she's going through and what the other kids are doing all day. But anyway, so she goes on her hot date with Brian and chooses to wear some sort of pirate ensemble. but these two actually have some chemistry. Like, again, Donna, if we compare this to Adventures in Babysitting, where she likes the guy after one scene just because, like, no real reason, just because it's a movie and she needs a love interest. But there are things about this that feel kind of genuine. And I have to say that this conversation they have on their date about, you know, picking a career and having it define you and what to do with your life, I can still kind of relate to a lot of this.
I think so, too. Yeah, I thought it was... I was surprised when I watched it again how much sense that sort of conversation made to me and how much it did feel like a really reasonable... Like, I think Steve Harvey would approve of this as, like, a good first date. He would be like, yeah, that's... Yeah, you should talk about those things. Or they both...
Wait, what... I know Steve Harvey. What is this reference I'm missing? Is he the host of some dating show now?
Are you not watching the Steve Harvey show? Oh my God, it's so good. It's on at 2 o'clock.
No one other than Donna is watching the Steve Harvey show, by the way.
She asks that like I'm the one living under a rock. Like, are you not watching the Steve Harvey show?
Well, I think you are. It's a great show, and he's really very informative. It's on NBC at 2 o'clock. Turn it on.
What
is
happening?
Chris, Donna hit rock bottom a few months ago, and
Donna, are you okay?
And Steve Harvey's been helping her out from a really tight spot. So I mean, as much as we judge it, we should really just be thankful to Mr. Harvey for showing Donna
about you.
That she can be an independent woman.
Donna, we're your friends. We love you. Please.
He's pretty good.
Oh my gosh. Well, the dishes are done, man. That's the next scene.
Done.
There's not really much else to say.
Yeah, the dishes are
done.
Oh,
wait. I do have to say something about that conversation.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting back to my theme about these writers were not of any particular age to have any kind of commentary on this plot. I think that scene rings true because that's probably where they were in their lives.
Yeah.
Like, that made sense because they actually knew what they were talking about in that one scene.
That's where they hit. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, everything else is like, everything else is basically like a weird fairy tale with no moral compass. You know?
I think that's what the poster says, yeah.
Roger Ebert raves, it's a weird fairy tale with no moral compass. Actually, you know, I'd go see that.
He might have said that.
I would have. Well, I'm on board. I want to talk about the lunch with Gus. Gus takes Sue Ellen out for lunch. This actor has made some strange choices. This is one of the ones I was talking about at the beginning. He is a cartoon. He's the skunk from Looney Tunes. Pepe Le Pew.
Really?
That's how he behaves. He's sticking his tongue out, and his mannerisms are so over the top and rubbery about, like, Lil, is sex on the table? Because I'm just kidding. But if you're into that, my eyebrows are all over my face. He's like coked out of his mind every scene that he's in.
Yeah,
that's
that.
Probably just true.
That's probably true.
Well, that's acceptable.
All right, I'm fine with that.
But you guys, there's no real conflict here because we know he's a sleazeball instantly. And right from the get-go, Sue Ellen is an expert at dealing with assholes and standing up for herself and deflecting in these situations. There's nowhere for this storyline to go. It's not like he's super suave and she might actually like him, but then, oh no, Brian is the one I really love. It's just advance, rebuff. And then at the end, oh, P.S. Rose, he's been doing this for the whole movie. My revenge was to make it look like he peed his pants. That'll show him.
Oh, yeah.
That's how, you know, that's how kids get back at kids.
It's true. It's
like, oh, look, he peed his pants, everyone.
He peed. Yeah.
Pee pants.
Did this happen
to you guys when you were kids?
Well, I was just always peeing my pants. It was really hard to differentiate between when it was a squirt gun and when I had actually...
Peeing your pants is the coolest.
That's... We got to talk about her and Brian in the toy store. First of all, what the hell are these pants that she's wearing? See, Carlos, I'm not even doing this on purpose. This is... They're baggy. They're pea soup green. They come up to just below her bibbity boppities, and they're held up by like a Santa Claus belt.
That's called fashion forward, Chris.
Right?
All right. Well, so anyway, she bounces.
Watch Steve Harvey.
That's just going to be the go-to explanation for everything that goes over my head in this.
Steve
either
Harvey
that or petty cash. It's one or the other. You pick.
Yeah. All right. Well. So she goes, she bounces around on some balls, blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's see.
Fashion show.
Well, okay, before we get to the fashion show, again, I guess we can sum up this section of the movie of just Sue Ellen realizing work sucks and the kids not really pulling their weight. Again, I'm not saying to like ditch all this stuff, but it's like I'm torn on this because I like the don't be in a rush to grow up sentiment. That's nice. But again, this all just starts to feel very repetitive. It's one scene after another of her being overwhelmed, not having enough money, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not saying to ditch that. That's one of the things I appreciated most. There's just no progression to this section. It's just like things don't get worse and worse. They coast along at the same level of difficulty as when they're first introduced, just until the very end. And I don't know if I'm being too hard on the film. There just seems to be a status quo for most of the running time.
Yeah, I think that seems about right.
Yeah, no,
they don't really change.
This movie needed another draft. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah,
it feels like a first draft.
Yeah, it feels really like seriously they needed to catch a plane to Australia in 20 minutes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Really quickly, Rose's 48-hour orgasm.
Ew.
That sounds terrible. I love cheesecake, but if I had to eat it for 48 hours, I would shit and die and never touch it again. Holy fuck.
Okay. All right. I think all right. Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I think it's just
I got nothing
gross
to add to that.
Yeah, it seems about
Hey, wait a minute. Why, when Brian is at GAW talking to Snooty Patootie, why does he not right then realize that Sue Ellen is there?
Oh my god, how many people are named Sue Ellen? I thought that because why she's right there and his sister is like, Sue Ellen, what is up? And I'm like, there has never been a time when there are so many people named Sue Ellen that you don't
like, he doesn't even
turn around
to be like, oh weird, another Sue Ellen.
Seriously.
Maybe he thought her name was Swellen.
There you go. Yeah. That's why. Swellen.
Whatever. I mean, I think that is how the movie wants to play it. It's like, no. He calls her by her nickname. He doesn't know her full name. He's functionally
ridiculous.
Retarded. Okay, so let me try and speed this along. Shit hits the fan. Walter falls off the roof, breaks his leg. The hospital has no problem patching up a minor with no adult present, by the way. GAW is sunk because students have revolted against the uniforms they make. That's the other thing I forgot about this movie. They're not just they don't just make clothes. It's not just like a fashion company. They specifically make uniforms. But wait, it's okay, you guys. Sue Ellen has a plan. She mixes and matches items to Frankenstein together fashion. Fashion with a capital. Fuck yeah. And so she tells Rose, we can save the company. She'll put together some designs and have a fashion show at her house. And now it's montage time. Yes. And we only get one in this movie. They showed some restraint. It's all the kids chipping in, coming together to clean up the house and get this place ready for the big fashion show. I guess Sue Ellen's just a fashion expert because she's a teenager, but Rose is really lucky that she also happens to be an artist. Mm. It's like Harry and the Hendersons, yeah. The end of the second act. Oh, by the way, I'm great at this. Did I forget to mention this earlier? I do like the scene of Kenny as the wife, though. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I do.
Where I spent all day working on this casserole and you didn't call me to say, you know, like I'm busting my ass here.
That's how the whole movie should have played up to that point, by the way.
But so Snooty Patootie and Double D find Sue Ellen's ID. Why is it at the office?
You know what I noticed too? That's a total mistake because when she comes home, my eye is always on that purse. That's my favorite part of the movie is that flipping purse of hers. She brings that purse home right before she has that fight with Kenny and she sits it down on the counter. It's sitting there. And that is the night that Double D and that awful face eater go into the office and get her purse with the ID. So.
Even if it hadn't just been a continuity goof, like, it's still just like she left her purse at the office.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But so now they know that she's only 17 years old. All right, so at this point, we have now reached the climax, the big fashion show. And I think you know what that means. It's time for Chris's Fashion Corner. Ladies and gentlemen, what a shit show. It's like a box of crayons exploded. This is everything I hate about the clothes of this era. Spandex and neon, as far as the eye can see. These designs will fuck your eyeballs and make you pay for their cab the next morning. This is hideous. This shit is hideous. And it's like, so these are all uniforms, but with a hip twist. Like the nurse's outfit that's... What, orange and purple? Is this what happens when you sprain your ankle at Pee-wee's Playhouse? If a nurse came into the room dressed like this, fuck it, I'm done. I'm better. You know what? I'll Google it. WebMD, I'm good. And the Boy Scout outfit? Holy crap, if you put your child in this, you are basically asking for him to get diddled. And here's the thing, and here's my real problem with this, is it's not just that these designs are terrible, it's that I don't think the uniforms, it's not the actual look of them that kids have a problem with. I think it's what they stand for. This is like repression of self-expression, right? So if everybody's wearing these nightmares, they're all still going to look the same. They're just going to look uglier and similar. It doesn't fix the real problem. And really, what, nurses didn't want any part of an ensemble that didn't have stethoscope earrings. That was the, this is the fix. Like, what a genius. I remembered the fashion show, obviously, but I did not remember the context of it. And fucking balls, was this a jaw dropper? There is no way this looked hip even back then. And that's why, Donna, it is shocking to me to hear that you looked at this and you're like... This is the future, and we need to put on fashion shows.
I did. I loved it. I thought it was so cool. I was like, oh, man, look at the diamonds on the side of her nurse's outfit. It's so awesome. She's got lace-up high tops.
Carlos, any thoughts about the designs of these?
Yes. I kind of thought, okay, this fashion show looks like it could exist in reality if... Tim Burton put on a fashion show.
I was waiting for the second part of that because I was like, no. Oh, yep. Yeah.
Right now I'm even like Google imaging some of these fashions just to get it back on the palette. And these are, I mean, this is Beetlejuice. This is,
oh my God,
this is
you're
the,
right.
This is the clowns in the nightmare sequence in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It's Tim Burton's wet dream of a fashion show. That's what this is.
Liberace would look at this and go, that's tacky. And you know what I like is when Brian arrives in the delivery truck pouring his heart out through the PA system.
Oh, I love this.
Does he not realize something is going on? He gets out.
I wrote the exact same thing.
He gets out and he's like, "You're having a party?" Yeah. What tipped you off? All the cars,
like
the valet parking,
cars,
the loud music, the lights. Why are you so surprised?
You know what's funny is before I rewatched this movie, the only thing I remembered about the fashion show was that he shows up at the end and he's oblivious.
Oh, right. Wow. All right.
I didn't remember like the actual fashions. I just remembered that he shows
and
up.
And that she tries to make it look like he's part of the show. I remembered that too.
Right, exactly. And he's like so disappointed and kind of humiliated. He was the best, like him and the brother were the best part of this movie.
Yeah, no, Josh Charles is a legitimately good actor, but Sue Ellen comes clean here, obviously she has to, and rather than pull Rose aside and tell her privately, she announces to everyone, including the potential investors, like, yeah, I'm only 17, I have no idea what I'm doing.
Oh my god. Well, her mom gets home too, that's also why it was
sure.
It's not just Brian, but mom gets home too.
Right, no, I mean, yeah, this is the moment where the jig is up, you gotta
come.
Her
mom is so uncool, she can't even, like, keep her mouth shut till the end of it and be like, okay, what the F, we need to talk. She interrupts the fashion show and it's like, you're in big trouble, young lady.
I'm going to side with mom on this
hell?
One.
I think not cool, mom.
If I came home to this, I'm not sure my first reaction would be, all right, well, I'll just let her wrap it up and then we'll get into it. I think if anything, she didn't react enough. I think that...
My first reaction would be, that old lady's dead, isn't she? Yeah, she's dead.
Well, the great thing is, too, is when you get to the end of the movie and the mom is like, I just have one question. Where's the babysitter? Even as an audience member, I'm like, oh, yeah, the babysitter. We should acknowledge that. But everything, it doesn't matter. Everything works out great. She reconciles with her mom, with Rose, with Brian. Everybody's changed for the better. The ending of this movie is horrific. Like, the final shot of the old woman's headstone.
Oh,
that just,
yeah, I like it.
This woman's family will never know what happened to her.
Oh, my gosh.
She was alone.
I was
she
thinking
said
the
it.
Same thing.
You know what, though? We skipped my favorite line of the whole movie, I think. I have to mention that when Sue Ellen does come out and say, yeah, I'm 17. Sorry, I can't be the hub of your communication. David Duchovny, in his infinite brilliance, turns to Carolyn and says, yeah, babe, justice is served.
Yes. And he even makes like a motion, like a, yeah, like a
he
fist,
does.
Like,
he bumps his fist.
Someday I'm going to be a good actor, but we're not quite there yet.
I was like rolling on the floor when that happened.
I mean, I'm not sure there are many actors that could sell that line, but it's especially like, even she's looking at him like, really? That's what we're going to go with? Is this, we're going to do another take, right? Because that's not.
Well, what about this line? What about the line, every woman over the age of 25 needs to keep a cucumber in the
boy,
house?
Oh, boy, does that take on a different context?
Okay, how did you take that line? Because, well, I mean, as a kid, it was just like, oh, she's talking about,
putting,
you know,
cucumbers on your eyes to...
Right.
Now oh it's, God. You need... Look, you're masturbating wrong. You...
Oh, God.
You should get... Here, I'll show you... Get a cucumber. I'll show you how to do it.
Oh.
You can just walk out here. I can do it for you.
It's so sad because of that movie. I remember as a child being like,
oh,
we
God.
Need to get cucumbers so that I can put slices on my eyes. And we were just, it did not take that connotation.
Speaking of things you masturbate with that are not explicitly for masturbating.
God in heaven.
I had a girlfriend in high school who I'm definitely not going to mention her name, but she masturbated with a dinner candle. And,
dear God!
And these were just for show, I think, because...
Oh, my God!
She used it, and then she put it back and was immediately like, oh, shit, because it was a lot shorter than the other one now.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
And then I was like, she was telling me this story, and I was like, hold on, can we need to rewind to the part where you masturbated with a candle. And she goes, well, that's not even the weirdest thing I've masturbated with. And I'm like, what else?
Oh,
she's like, a bike pump.
Whoa.
A bike pump.
I wish there was a music playing so that the record could stop.
Holy crap. What in the name?
But yeah, okay, so every woman needs a cucumber. You bring the cucumber, I'll bring the bouncy ball, we'll have a party.
Dear God.
Okay, so, I mean, that's Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. How did this hold up for you guys overall?
I mean, I loved it then, I love it now. I would be hesitant to let a 9-year-old watch it. Well, I guess not, because they'd never know that Kenny was a pothead. But, yeah, I think it's great. I thought it was awesome. I guess kids today probably would not appreciate the fashion as much as I did at the time. Although, you know.
Carlos, what about you?
This movie, I didn't like it as a kid. I didn't like it as an adult, but it just kind of has to exist, I guess. It's like, it's like a milestone, I guess, somewhere where I can go, yes, I remember like what it was like to live at that time when this movie came out, basically.
Yeah. I don't think it's a great movie by any means. I liked it more than I thought I would. And I understand its appeal. I do, especially like, it still feels like it was made very quickly to me, but there's also stuff I enjoyed about it. And like, I think I still managed to have a good time with it while it was playing. I mean, even though I'm making like a mental list of like, well, this is a little goofy and, or whatever. I liked it more than I thought I was going to. I liked it more now than I remember liking it as a kid. Yeah. I've already discussed most of my other problems with it, so I don't want to rehash it. It needs a fun in game section. It needs a kids let loose section. It can cut down on the number of siblings, from 5 to 3 and still be exactly the same movie, I think. Donna, I've got some fun trivia.
Ah, fun trivia.
guess what the Rotten Tomatoes score of the movie is? If you researched it, you probably already know. But 1,000%. You're absolutely right. They had to invent a whole new scale for this film. It's sitting pretty at 33% with the top critics.
Ooh, higher than I thought. Higher than I thought.
Well, there's only like 9 reviews. So
I'm going to get on there and write one.
I think the average review is like 4 out of 10. But unlike the other films we've watched so far, this one was not a commercial disappointment. It only cost $10 million, which I think actually that's higher than I thought. It looks less like, even like adjusted for inflation. I mean, this does not look like a $10 million movie to me. But it grossed $25 million domestically, so it was something of a hit. The original title was The Real World, but it was changed because of a brand new show from MTV that was set to debut the following year.
Get out.
Yeah. That's also a horrible title. The title of this movie is one of the best things about it.
It is, yeah, I love the title.
I mean, you stick that on a poster and you're immediately like, well, oh, that's okay, my interest is piqued, but The Real World, that's, and it, because it's not the real, this is not how jobs work, kids. Yeah. This is not going to work. Another trend with pretty much every movie we've watched so far, there has been talk of a remake.
Oh, come on.
The last time it was mentioned was back in 2011, but yeah, Donna, how do you feel about that?
Boo! I hate remakes. I hate that that's part of our culture.
I have mixed feelings about it because it's not... Obviously, Carlos and I didn't think as much of the movie as you did. I do think it's kind of a fun concept. I don't think it's a situation where it's like, look, there's no room for improvement. Don't touch this.
No, certainly not. No, that's it's not what I'm saying. It's not Shakespeare. I'm just saying, what's the point? Like, come up with your own movie. Why do you need to remake this piece of crap? It was what it was, when it was.
But there are so many unanswered questions. Because in the new one, there's going to be a 30-minute prologue about where the drag queens come from, why they dress up like women, why they steal cars.
It's actually, no. I heard that they were going to do a movie about the drag queens, and then one about the kids, and then one about the old lady. And then the remake was going to be like kind of like Avengers.
Oh, I see. Oh, so like a remake trilogy followed by a team-up movie. I'm on board. That sounds great.
This is the Babysitter Universe Phase 1.
Okay, guys. That's it for us. Before we close out the show, I just want to mention that I'm actually recording this little outro way after the fact, because what happened was at this point in the conversation, our Skype call dropped out. So Carlos and I disappeared and Donna was just left, you know, talking to herself. And I'm going to play a little bit of that for you because I think it's pretty special. Otherwise, let us know if you have suggestions for other films we should take a look at. Tweet at us, email us, Facebook us, whatever you kids are doing, do it at us. And here's Donna.
I wish that the fellas were still here, but another thing I wanted to say about Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead is that why don't we ever have beer busts anymore? Because there was a whole, Kenny was always having beer busts. And I remember that from my childhood being like, someday I'm going to go to a beer bust. But by the time I had turned 14, that was an absolute thing of the past. So, I don't know why we let go of that, but I might try to recall the guys here, and other than that, I'm just going to sign off. Let me see. All right, well, I'll tell you what, guys. Thank you so much for listening to Hey, Do You Remember? Didn't really end the way we thought it was going to, but I think that if Chris and Carlos were still on this call, they would tell you that Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead was, in fact, a fantastic movie that they loved rewatching with me. So tune in next week or next whenever, sometime. We'll be around. And thanks. Let us know if you have suggestions. And hey, do you remember?